Now we're in the middle chapter of the unit, and I want to say something about the title of it, because the title is cellular respiration, and I wish it weren't, because that's only part of what we're studying in this chapter. Yes, we are studying cellular respiration, but more than just that. The entire process, which cellular respiration is just part of, the entire process, though, that we're going to be looking at, is what I'm calling the complete oxidation of fuel. And since there's one fuel in particular that's more important in cells of all types, not just your own cells, than any other kind of fuel, what we're specifically going to look at is the complete oxidation of glucose. So that's the overall process, the complete oxidation of glucose. Cellular respiration is just part of that. You have to have a part that comes before cellular respiration, and that part that comes before cellular respiration is glycolysis. Now, we'll look at all these particulars in a minute, but I just want to orient you where we are, what we're studying in this chapter. And so in this opening slide, even though they wrote cellular respiration here, it's better to replace that with the complete oxidation of glucose. But the slide itself has this green box, as you see, and the green box represents some ecosystem. Well, remember what I said about ecosystems right at the beginning of the course, I think the first day. Specifically that in any given ecosystem, energy flows through an ecosystem. It enters and leaves, not necessarily as the same form it entered as, because energy enters. It enters as sunlight, which we see here in the yellow arrows. It gets transferred and transformed within the ecosystem, so moved from object to object and also converted into different forms of energy, and then eventually leaves the ecosystem as heat, the red arrows. On the other hand, materials, as opposed to energy, matter, gets recycled within the ecosystem. And so this brings up an important reciprocal relationship that's shown in this slide. A reciprocal relationship is a relationship in which one process undoes the other process. In a sense, they're kind of like opposites of each other. If you think in mathematical terms, right, reciprocals are fractions that when you multiply it by the reciprocal, you just get one, right? One undoes the other. Well, these two reciprocal processes are photosynthesis and the complete oxidation of glucose. Now, photosynthesis, which we'll study in the next chapter, was invented by bacteria long before any plants existed. They were the first organisms in which it occurred. But when some eukaryotes had the ones that engulfed bacteria that were capable of photosynthesis, remember I talked about endosymbiotic theory? That's how we got chloroplasts. And so photosynthesis in eukaryotes, as opposed to prokaryotes, occurs in chloroplasts. The complete oxidation of glucose includes glycolysis first, which occurs just in the cytoplasm, and then cellular respiration after that. And cellular respiration in eukaryotes occurs in mitochondria. Now, bacteria invented cellular respiration also, long before there were any eukaryotes that could do it. Long before there were any eukaryotes, period. And just like chloroplasts came from engulfed photosynthetic bacteria that survived, there were engulfed prokaryotes capable of cellular respiration that became the mitochondria. So these two organelles can represent different organisms, for instance, a plant and an animal, as an easy to identify with example. But it can also represent just a plant, right? Because plants have both chloroplasts and mitochondria, so they're able to do both of these processes. Back to why they're reciprocal, though. I said that a reciprocal relationship exists between the two major processes, photosynthesis and complete oxidation of glucose. That's because each of them undoes the other. Now, neither of these things, photosynthesis or complete oxidation of glucose, is a single reaction. Each of them is a complex set of reactions. In fact, multiple pathways. But you already know from what I've told you about pathways that you have a beginning and an end. And even though it can be a complicated set of steps in between, you start with something, you end with something. So we can summarize pathways, like photosynthesis, for instance, with a single reaction, even though it doesn't happen in one step. We can pretend that it's one reaction that takes what you start with and turns it into what you end with, even though it's really in several steps. And the summary reaction for photosynthesis, you can kind of see on this slide, is that carbon dioxide and water are the inputs. It's not just one step, even though I'm writing it that way. That becomes glucose and oxygen. And to balance it, you'd have to have 6 CO2s, 6 waters, and 6 oxygens. All right, that's not photosynthesis. It doesn't happen this way in one step. But we are summarizing it that way because this is what you start with and this is what you end with. Well, the reciprocal relationship means that the summary reaction for the complete oxidation of glucose, which also doesn't happen just in one step, but you can summarize it that way, is exactly the reverse of this. In other words, if you wrote this with these two switched, you start with glucose and oxygen, you end up with carbon dioxide and water. That's the reciprocal relationship. Photosynthesis undoes what the complete oxidation of glucose does, and the complete oxidation of glucose undoes what photosynthesis does. Each of them individually feeds the other process, right? Because the CO2 and the water that are required for photosynthesis get produced in the complete oxidation of glucose. The glucose, which is listed as organic molecules here, and the oxygen that photosynthesis produce are fed into, as a requirement, the complete oxidation of glucose. So this is continuing. This is part of the recycling of materials that happens in an ecosystem. But the focus of this chapter is the bottom part here, specifically the complete oxidation of glucose, which is performed for a reason. Glucose, which is what C6H12O6 is. Glucose is a monosaccharide, as we've already studied, and it is the principal fuel for cells. meaning that there's a lot of energy in that molecule, particularly because it has a lot of carbon-hydrogen bonds. There's a lot of energy locked up in those covalent bonds. And so fuels are molecules that cells break down, dismantle, in order to release that stored energy. Glucose is not the only fuel, but it's the most important one. All right? Well, why do cells do this? Ultimately, they need the energy that's in the fuel so that they can power the endergonic processes that the cell requires, that require energy, right? We're talking about this in the last chapter. But they don't use the energy directly from the fuel to directly drive those endergonic processes, right? So the purpose of breaking down the fuels is to capture some of that energy and use it to make ATP molecules to store that energy temporarily. That's why you have ATP coming out of the bottom here, which can then be used to power the endergonic processes. All right, now, if you look at the summary reaction for photosynthesis, what's happening is that the photosynthetic organism, whether it's a plant, an alga, or whatever, is taking CO2 as a source of carbon. But CO2, remember, is inorganic. Photosynthesis takes an inorganic carbon source and turns it into organic material. That process of taking an inorganic material and producing organic compounds is called carbon fixation. And only producers are able to do this. Plants are examples of producers. All organisms require organic compounds for raw materials and for energy, both. Right? Organisms in general are made out of organic compounds. So all organisms require organic compounds. Producers are the only ones that can make their own organic compounds out of inorganic material. All the rest of the world is made up of the other category of organisms, which are consumers. Consumers have to get their organic compounds already in organic form. They can't make their own out of inorganic material. That's why all of us rely on photosynthetic organisms. They provide the organic compounds that we use. But if we look at this summary reaction for the complete oxidation of glucose, which I'm just going to write with a leftward arrow rather than reversing it, this is the starting point, and this is the ending point. How would you categorize this kind of reaction? Metabolically. You're starting with glucose, you're ending with CO2 and water. Well, what are your two choices metabolically? I'm talking about your sets of antonyms. Which one applies to this? I'm talking about it written this way. Okay. Starting here, going here, that's the summary reaction for the complete oxidation of glucose. But metabolically, it would be categorized as catabolic. Right? You're dismantling this big complex monosaccharide into you're taking one 6-carbon compound and turning it into 6 1-carbon compounds. You're breaking it apart. That's catabolism, right? But catabolism, catabolic, goes hand in hand with exergonic in terms of energy, which is exactly why we're doing this. We catabolize our fuels because that provides energy. It's an exergonic reaction. Some of that energy is going to be lost as heat, of course. Can't do anything about that. But some of that energy that's released by catabolizing fuel gets captured by the cell and put to use building ATP molecules, which are now storing some of that energy that was in the fuel. So you could, these are the material inputs and outputs, but you could also put energy as an output because this is an exergonic reaction. For photosynthesis, which would be the other way, you have to supply energy to drive the endergonic process and the anabolic process of building up a sugar out of simpler things, CO2. The energy comes from sunlight. So the energy that's in the fuel that comes from the food that we eat was originally in sunlight. It got stored in the form of organic compounds, the sugars that plants make. We then use those as fuels to get the energy back out by breaking them apart again. And that allows us to build ATP molecules, which are storing some of that energy that was originally in sunlight. And that ATP is the versatile stuff that can allow us to power the many different kinds of energy-requiring or endergonic processes that cells have to perform. All right, well, let's look at two. I told you in lab that we will be talking much more about oxidation and reduction in this unit. And we can see that here. So, first of all, redox, what are the definitions? What is reduction? But what happens in chemical reduction? The definition of reduction. Reduction is the gain of electrons. Remember I talked about the confusing terminology? You're used to losing things when you say reduce. But reduce means go down, right? And if you gain electrons, which are bringing you negative charges, that means your overall charge is going down. The gain of an electron is reduction. The loss is oxidation. And since electrons don't get created or destroyed in the process, this is why we call the overall thing redox, because reduction and oxidation always happen hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Something gets reduced only if something else gets oxidized, and vice versa. Well, here we have this familiar example we started with when we first started talking about chemical reactions. Sodium and chlorine reacting to form sodium ion and chloride ion. That involves a transfer of electrons, right? From the sodium, which willingly gives it up, to the chlorine, which willingly takes it on to form the two different kinds of ions. So an ionization, which is what this is an example of, is clearly a redox reaction, right? Something's becoming reduced and something's becoming oxidized. But you can see which one's becoming reduced, but make sense of it in your head if you didn't have these labels. The sodium is giving up its electron, because it has that one extra, like we were talking about. It wants to get just like neon. It gives it up. It's losing an electron, therefore the sodium is becoming oxidized. The chlorine is taking on the electron, so it is becoming reduced. And you can see that in its charge. The charge is zero when it's chlorine. After it takes on the electron and becomes reduced, the charge is negative one. That's lower than zero. So the charge goes down. That's why it's called reduction. All right, now that's just a clear-cut example. Ionizations clearly are redox reactions. But there are redox reactions that don't that aren't actually ionizations that we'll talk about in a bit. Slide 3, though, is... am I out of time yet? Okay, let's take 5 seconds. Slide 3 is the same thing. It's just a generic example. X, there's no element called X. X can be anything. XE minus, E minus by itself is an electron, is just something that has the electron originally. Y doesn't. X gives it to Y, and therefore it becomes X and Y E plus, E minus. So it's just a generic example of an ionization. Ionizations in general, though, are redox reactions. So I'll try to remember that we're on 4.